My name is Bobby Reza, and you're listening to the Parting Shot podcast.
Sometimes these things happen in MMA. Oh, my God! Do you not have chills going up your spine?
You're going to be some over that turn!
I want to fight Ronnie from Jersey Shore.
You want to fight me?
Don't be scared, homie.
I'll knock you out again.
This is the Parting Shot podcast brought to you by MMAOddsBreaker.com. Now here are your hosts, James Lynch and Carlin Bardsley.
Welcome to episode 166 of the Parting Shot podcast. I am James Lynch, and on the other side of the world is Carlin Bardsley. Carlin, how's it going?
Not too bad, James Lynch. And all I have to say after UFC on Chicago is, holy Shevchenko, Batman!
Is it really UFC on Chicago? Isn't it just UFC Chicago?
No, it was on Chicago. It was on all night long.
That it was. And let's talk about our great show today. We got three awesome guests. First up, we're going to be joined by Chris Camozzi, UFC middleweight, who's going to be taking on Talis Latus. And after that, we're going to be joined by Bristol Marunde, who's got a show on HGTV called High Stakes Flippers. So not just doing his, talking in the cage, he's also got this reality show going. So we talked to him all about that. And then lastly, we'll be joined by Canadian Bill Mahood. Now, if that name doesn't sound familiar, that's okay. Bill Mahood is a pioneer in Canadian MMA. He was actually the guy to fight Forrest Griffin in his second UFC fight, so we talked to Bill all about that and his career and everything else. But up first, let's get to our sponsors, MMAOddsBreaker.com, your best source for gambling and information. Last word on sports.com, go check them out. And of course, nutrition supplements. Get free shipping anywhere in the U.S. if you use the code word SHOT.
The Big Three.
Let's kick off the Big Three, and joining us on the Big Three today is a man who's been on this program before. You know him from Sports Illustrated. Jeremy Klump joins us here on the program. Jeremy, how's it going?
Good. It's going good, man. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be back. But it's fan-sided, powered by Sports Illustrated.
Gotcha. I wanted to make it sound a little bit sexier than fan-sided with the SI name there. So
I like it. I appreciate it, though.
Good stuff. Just right off the bat, you're back. You'd taken a bit of a hiatus. I know you had a baby girl, and you were focusing more on the NFL stuff, but now you're back doing MMA. What sort of brought you to this decision to come back to the sport?
Yeah, man. I took a five-month break. You know, things were getting a little tough. I was doing a lot of interviews, doing a lot of writing, and didn't really have the time to put into it, so it was a little frustrating. I took the time off, and I was going to come back when she started to walk, and I was talking about it with the missus. I said, you know, I think when she starts walking, I miss MMA. I'd love to go back. And then out of nowhere, Jose Youngs, he took a job at Fanside and Sports Illustrated, and, you know, it was just him and I talking, and I'm like, wow, I missed it this much. I got to get back sooner rather than later. 2 days later, I took a job with them right away again, and I'm back on, and it's awesome, man. Covered my first fight this weekend, getting back at it for UFC, as Carlin say, on Chicago. So it was good, man. It was real good to be back. I miss the sport. I'm so excited. Got some cool stuff coming out that I'll talk about later. But yeah, man, it's awesome. I'm pumped to be back.
Well, we're pumped to have you back on the show, and let's get right into it. First point on the Big Three, UFC Chicago went down last night, and Valentina Shevchenko in the main event upsets Holly Holm on a Nate Diaz scale. How surprised were you, mother effers? I'll start with you first, Carlin.
I was surprised. I thought Shevchenko had a good chance in this one just based on her Muay Thai background, but Holly Holm was definitely the prohibitive favorite going into that fight, but Shevchenko had the answer for Holly Holm no matter where it went in the cage. Her counter game was extremely on point. She was able to shut her down on the fence for large stretches, and Holly Holm has got to be extremely frustrated right now from being on top of the world, knocking out Ronda Rousey with that head kick, and now she's pretty much lost in the shuffle in the organized chaos that has become the UFC women's bantamweight division.
And how surprised were you, Jeremy, when you saw that Shevchenko was able to go out there and basically outstrike Holly Holm?
Yeah, like you said, she outstruck her. It was very strange. My prediction for the fight was a Holly Holm TKO victory. I looked very dumb. It was strange, to be honest. Holly Holm, like Carlin just said, she's just downfall now. I mean, what do you do with Holly Holm? I think the biggest loser of this fight isn't even the UFC. It isn't Holly Holm. It's Ronda Rousey. I think she's the biggest loser of this fight for one reason. I wanted to see Holly Holm win, solidify herself. She's that one of those top bantamweight women in the world, and I want to see them fight again. But now how can you get Ronda Rousey back to fight Holly Holm if she's losing two in a row? So we'll see what happens. I just very surprised to see Holly Holm just get worked, honestly. She was everywhere she was going, she was losing. It was very strange to me.
if I'm going on the scale here, I'm probably going like a 6 or 7. I mean, it's possible Shevchenko, very decorated striker. I mean, that was her background coming into MMA, you know, known for, you know, having exceptional stand up. You know, like I said, when I saw this fight on paper, I thought, oh, you know, this is a fight for Holm to get back on track or whatever. I knew it was a possibility, but I didn't actually think it would happen. And I was wrong about this. And I got to give props. There's a lot of people out there who I know were high on Shevchenko. I just figured it wasn't going to happen. But Holly Holm now losing 2 in a row, first 2 losses of her career, and, you know, had that undefeated mark. That's all gone. I don't know what you do with her now at this point. It's tough to say what matchup's sort of next for her at this point. But Shevchenko getting it done. And now, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I saw Amanda Nunes, I believe on Twitter last night, wants to see Juliana Pena fight Shevchenko next. Not sure if she just wants to, you know, take a bit of a break, you know, and then fight the winner of that. But what do you guys think? Like, what would you like to see Shevchenko match up against next? I'll start with you first, Jeremy.
You know, honestly, I really don't know. It's tough. I think the big thing there, again, going back to the Ronda Rousey factor, I think you can't make the fights until you figure out what Ronda Rousey's doing, because if Ronda comes back, then obviously you have Shevchenko fight one of the contenders. But I want to see what happens with Ronda Rousey first before I could ever give you a concrete answer on that.
Fair enough. Carlin, is there anything that stands out to you, or you just figure, you know, wait and see how everything kind of unfolds?
Yeah, the specter of Ronda Rousey looms large over this division. But, I mean, you've got a new name in Valentina Shevchenko that could use a little more light on her. Why not throw her in with Miesha Tate?
Yeah.
I'd like that.
Yeah, that would be interesting, especially since Tate just got, you know, absolutely outclassed from Nunes, and Nunes obviously beat Shevchenko as well, so a little bit of MMA math there that might end up figuring out this puzzle that is the women's bantamweight division. But let's continue with the card. Second point on the big three. Anything else kind of stand out to you guys at UFC Chicago, aside from the main event, which we just talked about? Jeremy, I'll start with you first.
I might butcher his name and try to get it right, but Francis Ganeau, I think it is. I think that's how it's pronounced. I think so, yeah. I was so pumped, man. I think he is an absolute killer, and he was an absolute killer again. I was so excited to see him get the TKO victory, and I'm really excited to see what the future holds for him. You know, the heavyweight division gets interesting at times. I saw some people saying they wanted him against, I think Lewis people were going for. I really would love to see him fight Lewis. I want to see him start climbing. He shows a lot of potential to me. And I think anyone that can knock people out like he does, he has 100% finish rate right now. Every fight he's ever won in his career, he has finished. So I want to keep seeing him progress. I was very excited to see him get that win.
Carlin, what about you?
How about Edson Barboza chopping down Gilbert Melendez with those leg kicks? Those are absolutely vicious. My legs are sore just from watching that fight. And I got to give credit where credit is due. How about Felice Herrig? I had completely written off this woman. And she showed that she still got a little bit left in the tank. Great performance over Kaylin Curran, and proving that she has more than just her selfie game on point.
That she does, I should say. As far as you know, Gano, you mentioned him there, Jeremy. I think it's is this a very promising time for the heavyweight division? UFC finding a lot of these guys, like Gano, who's, you know, relatively young and could make a good run in this division. It's wide open right now. They've also, you know, they just signed Chase Sherman from Titan FC. They've got Curtis Blades. I mean, it's an interesting time in the division because we've got some guys that, you know, could potentially you know, make some noise in that division. And when was the last time you said a heavyweight prospect in the UFC division? At this point, I mean, it's a lot of the guys are usually really old, so that's interesting for sure. The card last night, you know, definitely delivered. I think it was one of those cards that you know, maybe on paper didn't really stand out. A lot of people saying it wasn't getting the hype it deserved, but you know, again, you get fights like this, and it really kind of surprises people. Is there anything else you want to talk about on this card? Otherwise, we'll move on to UFC 201. Forever speak. I'll take that silence as anything else. Carlin, you got anything, or should we move on?
We'll give props to Eddie Wineland as well. I thought he looked great over Frankie Zions.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's get to 201. Card kind of creeping up on us here. Let's start first in the bantamweight division. We've got Eric Perez taking on Francisco Rivera. Perez, the favorite right now on Five Dimes at -120. Rivera, the underdog at +100. Jeremy, who do you like in this fight?
I'm going with Francisco Rivera. I like people who finish fights, and he's got 73% finish rate. And, you know, like I said, finishing fights, that's exciting. Can always catch someone. He knocks people out, so I want to see what he does. I think he takes it.
Interesting. Carlin, who do you like in this fight?
I'm going to go with Eric Perez simply because Francisco Rivera has won win in his last 5 fights. I mean, it's not like he's fighting slouches by any stretch of the imagination, but momentum is not on his side. I think Eric Perez is going to be able to dictate the pace in this one, and I don't think that bodes well for Mr. Rivera.
This is a tough fight, and obviously the odds indicate that as far as where the line's set right now. Perez, I'm always going to just remember that fight he lost with Takeo Mizugaki, where it's like he should have won the fight, and he didn't perform in that matchup. He's had a couple fights where he really hasn't lived up to the hype, but Carlin hit it there. You know, Rivera just, you know, having a tough stretch right now, you know, and again, tough opponents, but I think a lot of people thought he was going to beat Brad Pickett, and that did not end up happening in that fight. I'll go Perez, but I'm very cautious on this one. Again, if the line gets up a little bit bigger, if Rivera's a bit more of an underdog, I might throw a little sprinkle on him as well. But it's going to be a great fight, and what a good way to kind of kick off the card here for the pay-per-view in UFC 201. All right, let's move along here to the welterweights. I feel so bad for Jake Ellenberger, and I might be an idiot for saying this, but anyways, Matt Brown, the favorite in this fight, he's minus 290. Jake Ellenberger, the underdog, at plus 245. Carlin, who do you like in this fight?
I didn't know Jake Ellenberger was still alive.
I know.
Like, seriously, has he got, like, one win in his last 20 fights or something like that? Give me Matt Brown and a laugher here.
Jeremy, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going with Matt Brown as well, and I'm laughing already, Carlin.
I'm actually surprised this line isn't even higher. Who is putting money on Jake Ellenberger at this point? I mean, just look at the records here. Ellenberger, it seems like his chin is just taking too much of a beating. He's been finished in, you know, a number of his fights. I know he's got the win over Koscheck, but, I mean, you know, Koscheck's probably retired at this point. I mean, we don't even know. But Matt Brown, if this was ever a fight, I mean, you know, UFC does some interesting matchups. If there was ever a fight where it looked like they were trying to give a fighter a layup, this would be it. Matt Brown, stylistically, is a nightmare for Jake Ellenberger. He can knock out Ellenberger, and I think he will. I think Brown gets the knockout either in the first or the second round. Again, I'm surprised Jake Ellenberger's still here. You know, one win in his last four fights, so give me Matt Brown in that matchup. All right, let's move along here. We've got a pretty cool flyweight bout. We've got Ian McCall returning. He's going to be taking on Justin Scoggins. Scoggins the favorite at minus 240. McCall the underdog at plus 200. Carlin, who do you like in this one?
Justin Scoggins all day. I mean, this kid is on the way up. He's got a lot of talent. Ian McCall on the downslope of his career. Unfortunately, just can't seem to get any momentum going. I like Scoggins probably inside the distance here.
Jeremy, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I really want to pick Uncle Creepy just because his name's awesome, but I'm going Scoggins as well. He's riding that momentum from his last fight. I think it was Ray Borg. He pretty much dominated him the entire fight. So, yeah, I'm going to go with him.
Yeah, I got to go with Scoggins here. And just it's mainly activity as well and just less wear and tear. I mean, McCall, a lot of injuries. You're supposed to fight Dustin Ortiz last year at UFC Fight Night 73. That didn't end up happening. You know, he was talking about retirement. Anytime a fighter uses the R word, you got to be a little bit worrisome. And McCall hasn't fought since the Lineker loss 2015, back in January 2015. So we're talking more than a year he's been out. McCall's getting up there in age. Scoggins on a roll. He really, really proved his worth in his last fight against a very tough guy in Ray Borg. Give me Justin Scoggins by stoppage, second round stoppage, submission, knockout, whatever he wants. I think Scoggins gets it done in this fight. All right, let's move along to the co-main event. Pretty, pretty cool fight. I like this one. Rose Namajunas taking on Carolino Kowalkiewicz. Probably butchered that. Namajunas the favorite at minus 250. Kowalkiewicz the underdog at plus 210. Jeremy, who do you like in this fight?
I'm going to go with Rose, I think. I think she's riding that three-fight win streak right now, and I just see her as the better fighter. I think she's going to take it. I think she'll put that first blemish on I'm not even going to try to say her name, but I think she puts the first blemish on her record.
Carlin, what do you think? Thug Rose or Double K?
Yeah, exactly. What's with all these Polish women invading the UFC and, you know, just destroying our ability to speak? I'm going to go with Thug Rose on this one. I just think she's a better all-round fighter. I think if this fight goes to the mat, then this is all Rose all day. Kowalkiewicz is a good striker, good Muay Thai background, but I like Thug Rose in this one. This is going to be the thing that vaults her towards a title shot with Double J.
Yeah, I really like Rose in this fight. Again, you guys talked about it here. More well-rounded, just bringing more to the table in her fights. I mean, Rose isn't, you know, winning fights. She's dominating fights. She's looking great. The fight against Tisha Torres, just start to finish, just a great performance. Kowalkiewicz, don't get me wrong, you know, had undefeated, obviously, for a reason. I wasn't too impressed, though, with her wins over Randa Markos and Heather Jo Clark. Close fights. I mean, they weren't ones where she was sort of riding away with it. So I like Rose in this one. And, you know, I'd be curious to see what the line is. Actually, I'll check it right now. Rose inside the distance would be an interesting prop here. Namajunas wins inside the distance is plus 181. So if you feel like Rose is going to continue the momentum of her getting a lot of finishes in her fights, might be worth taking a stab at that, but give me Rose in this fight. All right, main event. A lot of people don't like it. A lot of people say he doesn't deserve it, but Tyron Woodley is getting his title shot. He's taking on Robbie Lawler, the welterweight champion. Lawler, the favorite, minus 210. Woodley, the underdog, plus 175. Jeremy, who do you like in this one?
I think last time I was on this show, I talked about how Woodley shouldn't even be in this fight, but he is. I think Robbie Lawler's going to take him. I think Robbie Lawler's just too good. I honestly do. I think Robbie Lawler is a better fighter. I know Woodley's got the potential. He's been getting better and better. I just don't see him beating Robbie Lawler. And I'm pretty sure he hasn't fought in over a year and a half. I might be wrong if someone could fact check me there. I'm pretty sure it's a year and a half, though, he hasn't fought. So I just think Robbie Lawler's been so active. He's been in so many wars. And I just see him getting in another five-round war and winning the decision.
Carlin, what about you?
Yeah, the layoff here is a big thing to me. Tyron Woodley has not fought since January in 2015, and that was a split decision win over Kelvin Gastelum. And here we are in July of 2016 talking about now he has a title shot. Even just saying these words out loud don't make a whole lot of sense to me. But Robbie Lawler, people keep wondering, well, how long can his chin hold up? He goes through these wars every time, but until it happens, I mean, you have to favor the champion in this one. And plus, you know, he comes out to Hold On, I'm Coming, which is my daughter's favorite song, so I can't pick against him.
Nice. I like Lawler in this fight, but guys, I'm very cautious about this fight. This seems to me like we're primed for another upset potentially. I know Woodley's got the layoff. I know Woodley, you know, didn't look that great in the win over Calvin Gastelum, got the split decision there. Nothing to really write home about. But man, I wonder, Lawler, you guys talked about it there, you know, the win over Rory McDonald, the win over Condit, close fights. He took a lot of damage in those fights too. I have to wonder, you know, there's got to be a fight where he's going to slow down a little bit. Is it this fight? I don't know. It's tough to say. I'll take Lawler in this one. No bet for me. No, I don't feel confident enough. I think this could be another scenario where we could see another upset. And I think it's the type of fight where so many people are picking Lawler and so many people are kind of overlooking Woodley in this fight that it almost seems like Woodley could pull off the upset. I don't know what it is. Something's weird about this fight to me, but I'll take Ruthless Robbie Lawler in this one. All right, Jeremy. Always enjoy having you on the program. Appreciate you taking the time tonight. Just remind people where they can find you on social media and anything you got coming up for Fansided, not to be confused with Sports Illustrated, in the next little bit.
Yeah, you can find me at Jeremy Klump. That's Klump, K-L-U-M-P. And, you know, I'm getting pretty excited. You know, I said I'm getting back in the game, and it was tough with the interviews and stuff. But I do have some pretty cool interviews coming up. I can't say any names right now. I got to make sure everything's official, but they're pretty locked down right now. And for I'll give you a little hint, UFC 203, some big name guys on there. So I'm pretty excited to get back doing interviews. And you can see those on Fansided and Sports Illustrated MMA.
So you have it. That is Jeremy Klump joining us here on the program. And just a nice dude. You know, he reminds me of, like, he's like the Sean Smith of the U.S. Like, just super nice guy. Always positive. Always in a good mood. And obviously knows his fights. So it was great having him on here breaking down UFC Chicago.
Yeah, that's high praise indeed, calling him the Yankee Sean Smith. But yeah, Jeremy's a good dude. Always nice to hear his voice. And he actually took time out from a bout of extreme seasickness to do the show today. So I got to give him props for that as well.
Chris Camozzi, he's going to be taking on Talis Latest at UFC Fight Night 92 coming up here on August 6th. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
Fantastic. Always enjoy talking to you. And let's talk about your last fight, man. Huge win over Vitor Miranda at UFC Fight Night 88 back in May. Now, I know you didn't get the finish, but you must have been pretty happy with that performance.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. You know, there's always improvements to make. Like you said, the finish is what I really wanted. So I was disappointed in that. But all in all, the performance went pretty well. Followed the game plan well. He did exactly what I thought he would do. And you know, I just wanted to go in there, and he was known as a striker, so I wanted to beat him there and, you know, kind of impose my will on him.
And how'd you celebrate after the fight? I mean, it was in Vegas. You must have done something.
Yeah, we went out. We had a good time. Vegas is always fun. I had a lot of friends come out for that, so it's always good to have a big group of people to celebrate with. And my wife and I stayed another day in Vegas and just kind of hung out at the pools and went to dinner, and I saw the Michael Jackson one show there, and
oh, cool.
It was fun. Yeah.
How was the show?
It was awesome. Yeah, I'd definitely see it again.
And I heard you, I also saw something on social media. You got your hotel upgraded that weekend, didn't you, or something?
I did. Yeah. They hooked me up with a suite when we got there. So that was cool. It was more cool for my coach, Mark. So we, I think it was Mark. I can't, no, one of my jiu-jitsu coach, Chase.
Oh, so Hackett. Yeah, nice.
They gave me the original room that the UFC had booked for me as a suite. And I had my wife coming in and everything a few days later. And so rather than make the whole team move, when she got there, I just gave them the suite. And I took one of the regular rooms after a few days.
Nice. Oh, that's good planning on your part. Good teammate there. I like that. Now let's talk about this fight here with Talis Latest. Were you surprised that you got this fight? Because, you know, you've won three in a row, and Talis Latest is coming off that loss.
No, I mean, he's ranked higher than me, so I think this is the general way you move up the rankings, and that's all I can ask for is guys ahead of me. You know, there's plenty of times where you can get fights that it does nothing for your ranking. So this one is perfect for me. I mean, you know, in his case, I'm ranked below him, so beating me is one of those fights I was talking about doesn't really do anything. But for me, I've got everything to gain.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, the one thing I've noticed with Talis in his last couple of fights, he's really fallen in love with his stand-up, you know, obviously improved that aspect of his game. But you've also improved your stand-up. Do you feel like if the fight does stay on the feet that you'll have the edge?
Definitely. I think, you know, like you said, he's fallen in love with his stand-up. We know he's good on the ground. But I think that would be his mistake to not try and take it to the ground. But we'll see.
Absolutely. Who are some of the, I mean, obviously you're at Factory X training with the best of the best. Anyone specifically you're working with for this fight to get ready for a guy like Talis Latus?
You know, we got the usual guys that I always get ready with that seems to work for me. And, you know, I've got my coach, Chase Hackett. He's a jiu-jitsu black belt here. Our other black belt is JJ Pugsley. We got a few other black belts that I roll with and get plenty of work in with. But a lot of those guys like Brian Rogers, you know, he's big, explosive guy. You know, I like to think if I can get that guy off me, I can get anybody off of me. So all these guys, you know, seasoned veterans in fighting and jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai, they all help me.
And you're still doing your nutrition with the Melee way?
I am, yeah. That's been I think that's kind of been a big change in my career as well. You know, it doesn't get mentioned often enough, but just doing things right. I've never been the guy that's super shredded in there, you know. I may not look any leaner, but performance-wise, you know, it's obviously working. My body feels great. I'm stronger. And, you know, everything's kind of pieced together for me.
Absolutely. What's one of the favorite meals that he has you eaten? Because I know he does a really good job at making, like, custom meals.
Everything he makes is pretty good. You know, I think it was a few fights ago before I fought Joe Riggs. He had it was like a pulled chicken recipe for the Super Bowl. So everybody else was eating all this food and my wife made it for me in a crock pot, but it was like hot sauce chicken, but he gave me all the right ingredients to buy for it and stuff. I won't give away his recipes on here.
I was going to say, yeah, you can't spoil it for everyone. It's like the soup Nazi. You can't give away his recipes. They'll come after you.
Yeah, but it was awesome, man. It didn't even feel like dieting. So that was great.
Now, I'm sure you're looking at this fight and, you know, Talis Latus, a guy who, you know, has fought for the title and everything else. Where do you feel like a win over Talis Latus puts you in the division?
You know, I always say it, but I think it's got to put me right near the top 10. There's a lot of shifting going on all the time. But I think this win, you know, being 4 in a row, has got to catapult me up there. And, you know, the UFC is hearing my call and giving me higher ranked opponents. So, you know, after this one, we'll have to figure out who I want to fight and ask for it.
And, you know, perfect scenario, how many times would you fight for the remainder of the year? Are you looking to get a couple more in or maybe just one more fight?
I'd like to get at least one more in. I'd love to fight on that New York card. Sounds like everybody wants to fight on that card. But I would, you know, December, November would be nice.
Is there anyone – I know, again, super polite guy. I mean, I almost feel like you're Canadian in that sense. But is there anyone you kind of have your eye on after this fight? I know you're not looking past Talis, but I'm sure you're keeping an eye on the division.
Yeah, you know, one of the guys I had in mind before this one was offered was Musasi, you know, Vitor Belfort, any of those guys. I'd love to get in there with any of them.
Yeah, do you want to fight Belfort more so because he's a guy who's gotten away with, you know, the testosterone for a while and you kind of want to teach him a lesson? Because that's what it seems like a lot of guys do because, you know, with the whole thing that he went through.
You know, I don't care. USADA's somewhat working now, obviously. You know, that could be a change with how my career is going as well. But part of the reason I said Vitor is because I never seen anybody call him out. So I figured it might be an easier fight to get if you ask for it, since nobody else is asking for it.
Well, I think Musashi did actually, and apparently he didn't get the fight. He said something on social media about it. But nevertheless, I mean, you're being vocal about it here. And, you know, this is a very popular show, so I'm sure people are going to hear it. So that's great. Let's talk about, you know, August 6th, though. I got to get a prediction for this one. How do you see this fight unfolding with Talis Latus?
You know, I think it's going to be my job to keep it exciting. I think he'll want to strike it first until I hit him and realize that, you know, I've got a lot more power than people think. I move a lot more than people realize. So it's going to be my job to keep him off me. I know he likes to press against the cage, but I've got better takedown defense than a lot of the guys he's fought lately. And, you know, he likes the trips and judo type stuff, which I'm great at. And that's actually my style. So I think it feeds right into what I want.
UFC Fight Night 92 coming up here August 6th. Talos Latus and this man right here, Chris Camozzi. Chris, always appreciate you taking the time. Just remind my audience where they can get a hold of you on social media. And if you got any thank yous, any shout outs, the floor is yours, man.
Yeah, thank you. You can find me at Chris Camozzi on Twitter. And I believe it's Chris Camozzi 7 on Instagram. I got a fan page on Facebook, Chris Camozzi. And always my store, performancemma.com. Anything you ever order from there is straight to me. So that's kind of how I fund my fight camps and my family and everything else. I'm actually sitting out in here in front of it right now. So yeah, just performancemma.com. Let's see, my team at Factory X, which is connected to the store just down the street over here. My management team and Grain Media, and thank you for having me on.
And our next guest is a UFC veteran, now featured in HGTV, new great reality offering, High Stakes Flippers, the one, the only, Bristol Marindi, back on the program. How are you, sir?
Oh, man, I'm doing so good. Working my tail off, training, and life is good here in Vegas. Hot as hell, but it's good.
Well, I love to hear that, brother. And, you know, it's interesting because when I heard you're going to get this new HGTV show, I wasn't surprised because you've spoken before on this show and in other venues about your business. You know, you're a contractor, you flip houses down there in Vegas. But I got to know, how did the good folks at HGTV become aware of that?
They contacted me, I believe it was from Instagram. They saw my photos and they had a scout looking for some new talent. And my pictures caught their eye and they messaged me. And I'll tell you, at first I told them, I wrote back and I told them I've had enough reality TV for a lifetime. I'm good. Thanks though. And they said, no, we understand you were on Ultimate Fighter. And I said, yeah, I had a dialogue. They called me and I talked to them on the phone. And I said, I'm done with reality TV. That was enough. You know, I did 6 weeks in a house full of a bunch of animals. I'm good. And they said, no, this is nothing like that. We think you and your wife would be great for this show. The production company for Ultimate Fighter has such a bad reputation in the industry for treating talent and their employees terribly. This will be a whole different deal. You'll be the star of the show. We'll treat you good. We'll take care of you. And I said, all right, I'll give it a try.
Well, clearly it's worked out for you. I want you just to tell me a little bit more about the reservations that you had in doing an enterprise like this. Because like you say, you were on The Ultimate Fighter. You had to deal with, well, let's face it, Julian Lane in a house for 6 weeks. You know, I mean, yeah. When they brought you this, you know, no matter how many zeros were on the contract, did you just that voice inside yourself say, you know what? Nah, dude, I'm cool.
Yeah, exactly. I just, I said cameras, the whole drama thing, you know, I just like, my business is good. Why would I want to throw a bunch of cameramen and a TV show in the mix? Do it just fine without you guys. And now I have to throw my wife into it too, and my family. But after we sat down, they flew us out to their headquarters and they treated us well. And they filmed a 4 minute sizzle, what they call it. And we watched it and we loved it. We thought it was really cool. And I just talked it over with my wife and I think what turned me was that I think this is a good business opportunity. And unlike The Ultimate Fighter, once you're out of the house, you're kind of on your own. I think this will help build our construction business and our design company. So I think this is a win-win situation for us. So I said, let's go for it. And so that's kind of where we're at. We filmed the first house, and that would be the first pilot episode. And it aired a couple weeks ago and actually re-airs tomorrow night at 7 p.m. on HGTV. And it's getting great reviews. And I think it's a different product and it's a little bit more progressive than the other house flipping shows on TV.
So we've seen the first episode. Are you happy with the way that came off?
Yeah, I'm real happy. I think it's so much happened in 6 weeks. That's how long they were on site filming us when we flipped this house. And they have to condense that into a 30-minute time slot. But I think they captured it well. I think they got Aubrey's personality and her expertise, because Aubrey is the design, the realtor, kind of the ball buster. She kind of holds the whip, and I'm totally cool with that because I'm the contractor. I'm the muscle behind it. I let her deal with the numbers and the people. I deal with the workers, and I break things. And so it works out great, and I think they got that in the show. They were able to capture the giant army truck that we crushed a car with, and pulling the old junk cars around the yard with my truck, and there's a lot of fun stuff they were able to get on film.
Yeah, is there any the stunts that you do for the reality show that wouldn't necessarily happen if there was a film crew there, or is this just Bristol and Aubrey being Bristol and Aubrey?
You know, to be honest, it's like this is 100% authentic. There's enough content and enough stuff going on that we don't have to fake anything. I think it just happens naturally, and I think that's why the show is going to be a success. Is because it's all real, and it's real fun, and we put so much time and effort into these projects. We personally work our asses off on site every day, and there's tons of stuff that happens that we break and mess up, and it's just fun to watch it unfold, and we make a lot of money too, so it's cool. At the end of the project, we were able to walk away with a huge profit on this last house, and I know a lot of people were impressed with that, and all my friends are asking me for loans after they watch the episode.
Price of success, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the response been from the fight community? Because these aren't always the typical HGTV audience.
Yeah. Yeah, which is cool. I've gotten such good feedback from all my fighter friends and peers in the fight world. I think I think it's cool because I'm not really in competition with any of the fighters. It's not like I'm not taking the spotlight from them. I think everybody's legitimately happy to see me succeed in a different realm. And I think people generally want to see fighters succeed in life and in business, not just in the fight world. So I've been getting a lot of in the press and people just excited to write about it because it's pretty unique and it's not something that happens very often.
Do you feel like a success story? Because it seems like in the current climate anyway, there's a lot more attraction to writing about fighters who didn't save their money, who are down and out after their fighting career. And you're doing well for yourself. You've got your own reality TV show. I mean, you were kind of the antithesis to that.
Yeah, so I think that's part of the attraction is that people are grabbing onto in the MMA community is that, hey, there's a success here. Let's write about it because this guy is not down and out. He doesn't have concussions and he's not on welfare. He's actually doing really well for himself. He's on his way to getting wealthy and he's used his fight career and he's not like some washed up fighter story. It's hey, this guy is taking what he's learned in fighting and he's brought it into his business life and he's succeeding in his personal life and professionally too. I have a wife and two boys and I think people like to see a happy story, and I think that's part of what this is this is like a warm, gives you the warm, fuzzy feeling to watch us all work together.
And everyone that has ever encountered you, the first thing to say about Bristol Marindi is family man. Was there any reservation on your part about putting your wife and children in front of the camera that way?
Yeah, because they're going to steal all the spotlight. Aubrey's smoking hot, so everybody's going to, I know she's going to be the star of the show. But I think that's, that is the thing that Aubrey's going to be the star of the show, I think, because this is a more feminine network, I would say, more a, female oriented. with design and house flipping. And she's really attractive. She's really pretty, and she talks very well, and she's confident, independent, successful. I think she's going to be – this is really her show. So it's funny because everybody in the MMA community thinks it's my show. But really, it's our show, but she can be the star, and I'm totally cool with that. And I think that's what a good family man and I think a good person would do is to be happy the spotlight's not on me. I hope she, you know, goes on and does a great thing from the show because we're married. We're both going to benefit from this.
And the other interesting thing is that, you know, if she ever does encounter a problem with a client or something like that, I'm sure the cameras are going to be around to catch you walking up over her shoulder, giving the Marundi mean mug. Am I right?
Yeah, that's me. I'm the muscle, man. She she can get away with pretty much anything, and everybody knows that too. So everybody's real polite and nice to her, not just because she's extremely good looking, but because they know that she's got backup for, you know, only a phone call away.
Love it. So gotta ask though, you know, gotta get back to fighting a little bit here. What does doing this show mean for your fighting career?
Man, I think this is the show's only going to help me get some big fights, and I think I'll be able to continue fighting and do what I like to do. You know, my last fight, I was doing extremely well. I can't remember if we've talked since then, but you know, I suffered a broken jaw, and unfortunately, that set me back a little bit. So, but that being in the past, I'm fully healed. I'm training, sparring, and in good shape. So I'm going to come back at middleweight. I'm not going to be fighting at welterweight anymore. It's just too much of a weight cut for me. So middleweight, be on watch, because I'm coming out. I've been talking to a couple of promoters, and I think they've seen that the show, HGTV show, has come out. So I think I'm more of an attractive fighter to put on a fight card. There's that asterisk next to me that, hey, he's got TV time elsewhere. Let's throw him on the card. You know, so that I'm definitely going to fight again. You know, I think I made some promises probably through my wired shut jaw that maybe I wasn't going to fight again to my mom and to my other family members. And I'm sure they're not listening, so I can tell you. I'm probably going to fight again. You know, I'm training and staying ready. So, you know, if I've already talked to promoters and, you know, in the next couple of months, I'll probably know, you know, what's going to happen. I'm sure we'll talk about it then too.
And yeah, you touched on it a bit. You promised your mom or whoever through a wire jaw that you wouldn't fight anymore. And I've heard you say before, Bristol, that no one outside your gym, your coaches, and your friends kind of wants you to fight. Are people more supportive?
Yeah.
Are people more supportive of the reality show venture?
My gosh, you hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, everybody's like, oh yeah, that's great. You're promoting MMA and you've got this TV show. Like, oh yeah, why would you even want to fight? And I kind of just sit back and go, yeah, why would I want to fight? You know, why would I want to do that? And then I don't train for 3 days, and then I'm like literally pacing in my house, like shadow boxing and trying to wrestle Aubrey. And she's like, get off of me. Go to the gym. Like, what's wrong with you? Go to the gym, please. You know? So it's not really an option, dude. It's in me. It's something I enjoy to do. And if I could golf and if I could go to the, you know, I don't know, go to the bar and play darts with the fellas, like, I would do that. But that just doesn't do it for me.
And you mentioned that the last time we saw you in the cage, a spirited title fight with Gilbert Smith. I thought you were doing really well in that fight before he caught you in that fourth and you had the broken jaw. Have you rewatched that fight at all? And if so, what were your impressions?
Yeah, I watched the fight and I was doing everything according to plan. Everything was perfect, you know, and I saw the punch that he broke my jaw, and I had to slow it down and rewind it 15 times before, and the shot did not even move my head. It was not a hard shot at all. It barely brushed the side of my jaw. So I came to the conclusion that it was just bad luck. I did everything that I needed to do to win the fight and continue to he was starting to wear down, and that's when I heard my corner tell me to pour it on him, and that's when I was starting to pressure him into the cage. I had the fight in the bag, you know, and it was just a string of bad luck. So that's kind of why I want to fight again, because, you know, I feel like that was my fight to win. But, you know, it just, sometimes we just get handed we get dealt a bad hand. And I think that was just one of those cases.
So he just caught you on the right point, a pressure point or whatever, and it just happened to get you that point?
Exactly. It was just bad luck. And he barely brushed my jaw, and it just somehow broke. And so the surgeon said it's 100% healed, and I can return to competition.
Beautiful. Well, you know, you said you've had contact with some promoters. Is there one you're weighing more than the others? Is it going back to RFA? Is it going back to Titan? I mean, you fought in pretty much every major promotion with the exception of Bellator, if I'm not mistaken on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as U.S. promotions goes. Where, you know, if someone offers Bristol Morendi the dream ticket, where would you like to compete?
Yeah, I'd like to compete in Bellator. I think that'd be a great home for me. You know, in the meantime, I'm still on a contract with RFA. So I'd like to do another fight with RFA, and then I'll look at my options and see where I'm at. But I think I would really like to do Bellator. I've fought in every other damn promotion. I might as well just hit one more.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I'd love to see you under the Bellator umbrella. You know, they seem to be promoting guys who have a big name, and certainly with HGTV behind you, you know, you've got a very inflated value, I would say. I want to see you cash out, brother. I got to say that.
Thanks, Chad. I appreciate that.
So are you going to still continue to promote shows in Washington State? Is that still on the docket for you or what?
Yes. Yes. I have another big one coming up. My shows have been doing awesome. I've been selling out all of my events. I've built great momentum, and I'm really excited about the fighters that are that I've been turning out. We have some great amateurs, and I'm building in and turning pro on my show. And so in the next couple of years, I think you're going to really see some tough talent coming out of my events. And my next event is September 3rd, so I'm matchmaking that fight card right now, and I just love to do that, just to give these guys the opportunity to compete and fight when they, you know, can actually trust the promoter to match make them correctly.
Well, there you go. That's exactly what this sport needs. I'm glad you're filling that void. Now, we're seeing someone in the United States right now, and admittedly I'm not there, but who seems to have little other credentials than a reality show, and they're now a nominee for president of the United States. So my question to you is this. What do you think? Morendi for president in 2020? Low taxes, not low blows.
Yeah. Let's do it, man. If I can pass the lie detector, I think we can make it happen.
All right, there you go. 2020, vote Bristol. All right, Bristol, thanks so much for taking the time again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always a great time. Just remind people where they can find you in the social media universe. Remind people when they can find High Stakes Flippers on HGTV, and anything else you want to throw out right now, this is your time, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Jan. I appreciate it. I love being on the show. Check out my new house flipping show. It's on HGTV tomorrow night, Thursday at 7 p.m. And you'll get to see what I do outside of the cage and what takes up most of my time. And you'll get to see my smoking hot wife, too, so back off. You can find me on social media. It's all my Twitter and Instagram and Facebook is all just at Bristol Morendi. So I'm easy to find, probably the only one. Although I did find, after the flipping show came out, I had a few people message me. And there's a guy that lives like 15 miles away that actually has the name Bristol, his first name. So that's kind of cool.
Nice. Small world after all, isn't it?
Exactly. And he works for the city. So he said if I ever need to build in the city of Henderson to get a hold of him so he can help me out.
There you go. Contacts. Well, look at you.
That's it. But...
networking. All right. Check it out.
Exactly. So.
Check it out on HGTV, High Stakes Flippers. Look for Return to the Cage for Bristol Morindi very soon on The Parting Shot.
My next guest is a Canadian MMA pioneer who now spends his time coaching and was just in Vegas a couple weeks ago for the amateur tournament where he coached Team Canada. Bill Mahood joins me here on the program. Bill, how are you?
Doing really good.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you here, like I mentioned. And a lot of new school MMA fans will not know who you are, but a lot of old school MMA fans will. How did you get involved in MMA for those who don't know kind of your backstory?
Oh, man, way back in the day, it was just kind of something I wanted to do. I was a traditional martial artist, and, you know, we used to get around, you know, hang out and watch UFC 1, 2, 3, 4, and kind of figured, man, that'd be something I really like to do. So a bunch of us kind of just started getting together and doing what we saw and evolved from there.
Now, you made your pro debut in 2000. What was the MMA scene like way back then? Because obviously it's a lot different than it is right now.
Yeah, it was... It was pretty hardcore. I mean, we're talking, we still had bare knuckle bouts. You know, my first, my first handful involved soccer kicks and, you know, knees to the head and the ground. So a lot like Japan, only with the elbows. Yeah, the promoters weren't really regulated. A lot of the shows, you'd show up and, you know, someone would, they'd drop a box of old gloves in the middle of the change room and say, "Okay, guys, have at it." Referees were wearing, you know, board shorts and t-shirts and had no idea what they were doing. It was Wild West.
Did you ever think it would become as big as it is today?
You know, when we first started, no, and I don't think any of us did. I still have one of my students fighting in the UFC now, Cajun Johnson. And it was funny because, you know, he started fighting, you know, darn near when I did, long time ago. And we used to take fights just for shits and giggles. You know, you'd take the fight. He fought Josh Thompson on like 4 days notice when he was like 18.
That's right. I remember that.
You didn't care. You just showed up to fight. Now, you know, everybody that's fighting is very calculated. You know, who are you going to fight? Are you going to win? Are you going to lose? People are worrying about records. You see a lot of fighters who get into the UFC with what would seem like fairly padded records. You know, they go in there 10-0, but you look at who they fought and it's a whole roster of 3-3 guys or 0-4 guys. And back then you just fought.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. You know, you did have an appearance in the UFC. People will remember it was UFC 53. You took on a Forrest Griffin, and you actually came off a loss in that fight. You lost to Patrick Cote, I believe, in TKO. But just take me back to that time because, you know, Forrest Griffin, obviously a big star coming up, the Ultimate Fighter, the fight they always talk about with him and Stephen Bonner. But, I mean, you were pretty much brought in there to lose, if you know, because they're not going to have their Ultimate Fighter guy lose his first fight. Am I right?
Well, you know, there was a bit of a backstory there.
Okay, let's hear.
When they were filming the original, the pilot for The Ultimate Fighter, Dennis Kang and I were brought to Vegas, and we were part of the filming of the pilot. Jason McDonald at one point was involved as well. And we did a ton of stuff. I mean, we were riding around in the vans with all of the majority of what would have been the Ultimate Fighter 1 alumni, doing everything, doing pre-filmings, shooting all sorts of sequences. They brought us to a UFC, filmed us watching it, did all the medicals, everything. I was told that, you know, I was on the show, and then I wasn't. So from what I've kind of found out over the years is that the original producers did not want a Canadian that had even a remote chance of winning the show.
No way.
So they ended up with our lovely friend there, Strange Brew.
Jason Thacker, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and the rest is history. So I think that first fight might have been a little bit of a, you know, throw you a bone for kind of screwing you over on the original show. And I mean, it's cool. Forrest is a real neat guy. We've run into each other over the years, and he's always been, you know, super good guy about it. And if you got to lose to somebody, it's a good guy to lose to, I guess.
Well, you know, take me back to that fight. Were you really nervous? I mean, this was sort of like the beginning of what would be the monster that is the UFC now. And I remember that fight, and I remember, you know, being like, oh, there's a Canadian guy here. This is great. Because, you know, at the time, I mean, there was, you know, George St. Pierre, but there wasn't too many guys in the UFC at that point that were Canadian. So what was it like, you know, just take me through your UFC debut here. What was it like getting to fight Forrest Griffin?
In looking back at it, I think nerves play a huge role. You know, people talk about UFC jitters and stuff. I think there's definitely a bunch of that there. During the fight, though, if you had to ask me, I would have been, hell no. I was healthy. I was good to go. I didn't have any injuries. I'd spent probably a 6-week training camp with Dennis Kang at American Top Team at the time. So I had wicked training and preparation. Felt good going into that fight. people who know me say that, you know, when they see the fight, I kind of didn't look like me. So I think it might have been a little bit of that deer in the headlights. But, you know, that first time you hear Buffer say your name, you know, live, it definitely throws you off a little bit.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Now, you could, like I mentioned, you were brought in to lose basically because, you know, they wanted Griffin to get the W there. Were you surprised they didn't give you another fight just with the fact that, you know, because of the circumstances, you know, they obviously wanted Forrest to win, you know, figured they would have given you another one just as a favor, no?
You know, that would have been nice. I was pretty bummed out about the whole loss because I felt that was a winnable fight for me. I never really pursued Joe Silva after that. You know, and again, in hindsight's everything. I probably should have just been a thorn in his butt. I should have been phoning that guy, you know, three times a week going, hey. I was really pretty bummed out about it. So, you know, I never really chased it. And I think that history's proven with Joe Silva anyway that, you know, Dana, the guy who chases it sometimes, you know, gets rewarded. And I didn't chase it. So that's probably something I'll look back at and regret for a long time.
You ended up leaving the UFC. You went on, you know, you fought in a variety of different promotions, but you racked off 5 straight wins before retiring in 2010. Why did you retire? Was it injuries? Was it age? What sort of brought you to that point of retiring?
I've had double detached retinas over the years.
That would do it.
You know, yeah, both the retinas go. So I was told by an eye doctor that if I keep getting punched in the head, there's a real good chance I'm going to go blind in one, if not both of the eyes. I'd still be fighting if I wasn't, worried about going blind. But age plays into it. I mean, especially back in the old days, like I remember Dennis Kang and I training together. We used to have epic gym wars. I mean, everybody thought, oh, shoot the box was the bomb. We did things like they did it. So you'd go in and you'd have pretty much fights in the gym 3-4 times a week. And, you were sparring, you know, every second day. It took a lot more toll, I think, than the actual, 31 pro fights I had.
Looking back at your career, what was sort of the most memorable fight, the one that sort of stands out among the most?
Well, of course, the UFC is a big one, but it's not a good memory. I fought a guy named Cameron Brown in Vancouver. It was, I believe, the first licensed MMA match in Vancouver. And we fought in downtown in a theater called the Orpheum Theater. So it was kind of weird because the stage, the ring was, cage was up on a stage. At that point, it wasn't even a cage. It was a ring. And it was a 3-round just goon fest. And that was probably my favorite memory because it was, it took a fair bit of fortitude just to get through the thing. And we ended up with a draw on it, although I still think I won that fight.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. You've referenced Dennis Kang a few times in this interview. What's Dennis up to? Because I think a lot of people were kind of surprised to see him sort of halt his career. I know he ran into a few losses there, but what's he up to these days?
Living in van, teaching jets, you know, kind of just doing the old retired fighter life. And he was a big part of my career. We became friends early on, back when there was nobody out west really training at all. And I was way up in Prince George with nobody. So I used to go to Vegas and train with John Lewis. My first jiu-jitsu belt was through John Lewis. And then when I met Dennis, I finally had someone kind of in my end of the country to train with. And he was under Marcus Soares. So we were, we would start training then. And, you know, we've pretty much been friends ever since.
Sticking with BC MMA, what are your thoughts on some of the stuff Battlefield's been doing? Because it's nice to, have an organization that's consistently putting on shows and also giving fighters in that area, sort of opportunities.
Yeah, Jay does a good job. I remember when he very first started and came up, we were talking a lot and he kind of had his business plan about doing, 3 or 4 shows, maybe losing a bit of money and then recuperating it all on a TV deal. And I'm like, well, geez, Jay, probably got the first part of the plan, right? Second part might be a little tougher. And talking to him, I don't know what he's at, 25, 30 fights later, I think he probably laughs about his, being a little naive as to how easy it would be to get going. We regulated all of his first shows in Vancouver as
MMA, interesting. Okay.
The Mixed Martial Arts Association of British Columbia. Because back when he started, professional MMA was banned in Vancouver, if you remember. So you couldn't put on professional shows. So Jay put on his first dozen shows were all pure amateur shows. With MMABC regulating it, we really, I think, helped elevate the amateur scene. At that point in time, there was probably 4 promotions, maybe even 5 promotions running just all amateur shows in BC. And we regulated, I think, in the 3 or 4 years that we were in operation prior to the BC Athletic Commission kind of coming in and taking over, I think we regulated 67 events.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
So, I mean, things were hopping in BC, and we were producing some crazy young talent, like Jamie Sherrod, who's still out there fighting, taking titles. These guys are like a little ninja. I mean, him and Cameron Winter, and I mean, all these guys, Chris Anderson, these guys were all getting their teeth cut in the amateur circuits in BC, you know, back then.
And if I remember correctly, you were also responsible for the commission that put together a UFC 115 in Vancouver, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I was involved with them when they first got the commission on. I knew a few of the people standing on the commission, so they brought us in to kind of, you know, talk and help a little bit about what they're doing, how they're doing it. We already had been regulating shows, so pretty much all the corner inspectors in that entire event were MMABC guys. Kevin Dorn and Tony Williamson, they were MMABC guys. They're on the board of directors. So that entire regulatory body on that was very much looking like MMABC. And I got to judge on that card, so it's pretty cool.
That's right, yeah. That's what it was, I remember there. Is the UFC going to give you a comp ticket to the upcoming UFC Vancouver card at all? You're going to have to pay for your own ticket.
Nobody gets comp tickets. Are you kidding?
Well, I don't know.
Unless,
maybe they're like,
unless you're actually fighting on the card, because then they give you four tickets.
Well, if I were you, I'd call up Joe Silva and be like, look, do you remember me? I'm the guy who had to fight Forrest Griffin. You think he could help a brother out? I would have done that, but that's just me personally. But
yeah.
Now, does it bother you at all? You know, people talk about Canadian MMA and the history of it. Does it bother you at all that they reference a lot of Ontario MMA, but they don't reference BC? Because I think there's a lot of history there with the work that you've done and other fighters, you know, like John Alessio and guys that have been in the sport for a very long time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's tough to argue too much. I mean, especially, you know, Quebec and Ontario. I mean, Quebec produced George St. Pierre, obviously, David Wiseau. I mean, it went on in Ontario, and you've got guys like Hominick and Stout and Hordecki. I mean, so, you know, there was a lot of real notable guys there. West Coast, a little less so.
Rory McDonald, though. I mean, come on.
Well, he's the one single big one, right? And we've had a few others since then. So, yeah, you know, we probably don't get as much of our due as we deserve. But then again, their population base, they should be producing a bunch more guys than us.
Absolutely. Obviously, you know, you retired and you made the transition to coaching, and I know that's gone very well for you. You're the head coach and team leader at the Canadian Combat Alliance, and you also coach Team Canada, like I mentioned there. This past weekend in Vegas, or a week before in Vegas, for the amateur tournament, how did Team Canada do, and how has it been being involved with the amateur fighters?
Well, I mean, it's good. I was lucky because right from day one, there was no one to train with, you know, where I lived in Prince George. So I was coaching probably from day one, even when I probably shouldn't have been coaching. You'd go to Vegas, you'd learn some moves, you'd come back, you'd have half a dozen guys you were training with. So I've been coaching from day one, also with the commission stuff, because I had to help the Prince George Athletic Commission, which was the second commission all of Canada to regulate MMA. Progression to the national MMA scene, national amateur MMA scene, I think was you know, just there. We went to the very first IMAF, which is the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation, with their very first world championships in Las Vegas in 2014. I went as an official and was involved with the team, but was not the team coach. Since then, the IMAF has grown tremendously. I mean, the very first year, I think there was 9 countries. Second year, there was 20. This year, there was 37 countries. They put it on at the Las Vegas Convention Center as part of UFC Fan Week. It's a big show. It's an incredible opportunity for athletes from all over the world to get onto a really big stage. They film it with the UFC Fight Pass. UFC is the primary backer of IMAF, so there's a lot of perks involved there. The level of competition this year was incredible. And in the end, Team Canada, we dropped from our third place in the world to fifth place. And we picked up one medal this year as a silver medal. Actually, one of my students, he won a silver medal last year as well, Alex Martinez. We picked up no other medals, whereas last year we picked up 2 golds, a silver, and a bronze. Now, one of the things I think is that we're having trouble as a national body attracting amateur athletes from across the country. A lot of guys, they're just not coming. I don't know if it's their coaches that just don't realize how big of a deal this is. The mentality that, wow, just start fighting pro, what the heck, why do you need to go amateur? We, for instance, had absolutely no representation this year at our nationals from Van City, not a single fighter. So I sent out a nasty little post kind of saying, what, all the fighters in Van City suck? Well, what's the matter? Where are you guys? So I'm not sure if it's just a low cycle for amateur MMA there, or if people just don't want to get in the car and drive 6 hours.
Yeah, it's interesting. You wonder, too, if kind of the way the sport's changed a little bit now, where guys just immediately want to go pro, they want to sort of rush their careers, if that has anything to do with it. But like you mentioned there, the opportunity to compete at a tournament like that is second to none. So hopefully that changes, especially for BC MMA. Before I let you go here, who is someone that you've had a chance to work with that's like an up-and-comer that you can tell us about here that really has a shot to, you know, do amazing things? And his name cannot be Jamie Siraj because I've already interviewed him.
Yeah. Well, as a pro, I'm working with a guy named Spencer Jeb.
Oh, of course. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spencer, one of the top Canadians. He just lost the fight actually to Michael Hill of all people, but, we kind of put that one the judging on that fight was atrocious. It was unfortunately in my own jurisdiction, my own commission, a body I used to be on. He ended up losing a split decision on a fight that he should have won, and not one of those ones where you could flip a coin and, you know, it could go either way, but it was a, you know, an obvious 29-28 fight. So Spencer Jeb, for sure, he's got the work ethic and skills that he could go somewhere. Alex Martinez, my silver medalist, is another one. He'll be going pro here right away. I think he'll make a pretty big splash. He's ran a 18-3 amateur record, including 2 silver medalists at the Worlds. So tons of experience and a work ethic as well that's going to help him propel himself. I send both of those guys to TriStar. They've been there probably three times a month ago to help, you know, get some extra sparring and fortify and give them a change of venue, right? I think a lot of coaches tend to try and hang on to fighters, where me, I'm the opposite. I'm all about, you know, it's the fighter. It's because I used to be a fighter, I guess. You need to learn. You need to develop. And the best way to do that sometimes is just to throw them in with a bunch of sharks.
Bill, this was an absolute pleasure. I wish we had more time, but I don't want to keep you too long. I really appreciate the time. Just remind my audience where they can get a hold of you on social media. And if you got anything you want to plug, any of the gyms you're involved with, any of the coaching, any of that stuff, the floor is yours, man. I'll give it to you here.
Well, I mean, I'm on Facebook under Bill Mahood for sure. Canadian Combat Alliance is our national body. We can always get us on the Canadian Combat Alliance page. I would train at Champions Gym up here in Grand Prairie. So if anyone's out in northern Alberta for God knows what reason, they can always stop by Champions Gym and hit the mats.
You are next.
All right, let's get on to fight fixing. And a guy who Carlin referenced in the breakdown there, just had a great performance last night, and that's Edson Barboza. This guy has really found a second gear. I mean, there was a point when people were saying this guy had a chin that was gone. He's got another impressive win under his belt, this time over Gilbert Melendez. So what do you do with him, Carlin? I mean, he's beaten the guys that, you know, I think people might have not expected him to beat. I say you give him the winner of Michael Johnson and Dustin Poirier, that fight that's coming up, that's headlining UFC Fight Night 94. Barboza, we don't really know where he fits. There's a lot of uncertainty as far as, you know, what's going on with the title picture, who's Eddie Alvarez going to fight next, what about Khabib? I think this is the fight to make. I think stylistically, people love watching Barboza stand and trade with guys. I think fighting either Michael Johnson or Dustin Poirier is a good option. So what are your thoughts on that, Carlin? What is your fight fixing this week?
I like that fight, absolutely. And Edson Barboza, you know, he's one of those guys that it seems like the USADA testing has taken a lot of Brazilians, but Barboza just keeps getting better and better. So, yeah, well, while we kind of wait and see what happens with Eddie Alvarez, Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, that whole brouhaha, Edson Barboza is going to continue to rack up W's, and I would love that fight against him, Johnson or Poirier. I would watch the hell out of that. And Jeremy kind of alluded to it when we were talking about UFC in Chicago. Francis Ganeau continues to impress. I don't know how do you not love that guy. And I love violence, James Lynch, as you know about me. And I think the most violent prospect that we can put together here in terms of potential matchups is him and the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. That would look great opening up a pay-per-view or on a UFC on Fox card. 2 heavyweights who just want to put their fists through each other's faces. Sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely. This makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, both guys really, really showing that they belong in the heavyweight division. Lewis on a bit of a roll, and obviously, you know, Ngannou as well, or Ngannou, however you say it. Sort of the future. It's a prospect versus veteran matchup. I love this fight. Let's do it up. I mean, they've got to start making other contenders outside of sort of the top guys. So this is one of those fights where the winner is going to be close to a title shot and the loser is going to take a step back. So I think either way, you can't go wrong with both of these fighters.
And now it's time for the bet of the week.
Let's get on to my bet of the week, and I know last week we didn't have one because the lines were out. We got some lines this time, and there's actually a bet that I do like in this fight. Now, we talked about in the breakdown there, or the preview, I should say, of Matt Brown and Jake Ellenberger. I really like Matt Brown in this fight, but you're not going to use him at, what is he right now, at minus 290. You're going to want to get him, at a cheaper price. So right now, if you want Matt Brown inside the distance right now, it's minus 173. But even that's a little too rich for my blood. I'll be looking for the KO prop, actually, when that comes out. Can't see Brown submitting Ellenberger. He'll probably knock him out, if anything. So for now, we will stick with the inside the distance prop. But again, not going to get great value with that. So let's parlay that. Let's parlay with someone else on the card. And that is Rose Namajunas. I feel very confident that Rose is going to get the job done in this fight. You parlay the two together, Carlin. Comes up to plus 118. Everyone loves plus money. So, Carlin, what are your thoughts on the bet and both those fights?
Yeah, I mean, Matt Brown, they've all but gift-wrapped him a W and probably a very violent one at that against Jake Ellenberger. As we said, Thug Rose just has too much tools in her toolbox to really worry about losing to a woman the caliber of Carolina Kowalkiewicz. So if you're going to get plus money out of those two, abso-frickin-lutely take it.
It's now time for listener questions. If you have a question for next week's show, be sure to tweet us at Parting Shot MMA.
Let's get on to our listener questions. We actually have some this week, and I got to thank Nick Baldwin and Nate Leahy, of course, always submitting questions. We got out early this week, so we were able to get some. We got tons, so let's get right into it, Carlin. Let's start with Nick's questions. Some of these are... we'll kind of just take him in stride. Nick wanted to make them kind of like dumb questions like he does in his show. But he says, do you think Brock Lesnar failed drug tests had anything to do with him representing Canada, perhaps the heir?
Perhaps he tested positive for moose meat or something like that. But it's kind of funny that Brock, comes out as Canadian and then all of a sudden he's failing a U.S. test. I think it's an American conspiracy myself.
Yeah, that's what I think too. American conspiracy, I'll stick with it. Second question from Nick. He says, when can we expect an impression off between James and Justin Golighty, a.k.a. at Secret Moves MMA on Twitter? I've heard Justin do his impressions, and Justin, if you're listening, I appreciate listening to the show, but I will gladly do an impression off. I think I got a good arsenal of impressions, ranging from Gegard Mousasi to Freddie Roach. So I will. Anytime you want to do this, we'll do it up. I'll take your George St. Pierre and your Nate Diaz over my Gegard Mousasi and Freddie Roach. So let's do it. Anytime. You just hit me up on Twitter, man. We'll do it up. What are your thoughts on that, Carlin? Have you heard this other guy do his impressions? He was on Clown Kid's show.
Was he? I missed him on that one, unfortunately. But I'm always up for a good impression off. I really only do Mr. Burns, but I'll watch you guys do it.
Nick also asked, what do you set the over-under for singers' bands that Nick has actually heard of? Any singers' bands in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 00s? I'm going to go under... I'm going to go under 500. I think Nick doesn't know. Like, there's so many references we make in the show, and just Nick just, he won't get it. He's just not part of the generation like you and I, So I'm, what are you going to set the number at on this one?
I don't know. I don't know if Nick has ever heard a song that didn't involve a stupid pop beat or something like that. These damn kids and their music, their hip music and their complicated shoes, get off my lawn.
Nick also asks, who should I trust more when it comes to free bets and bets of the week, James or Sean Carey? Sean Carey, man, this guy does this. He charges people for his picks. He knows what he's doing. The proof's in the pudding. My record for picks this year has been awful. Actually, probably one of the worst years I've had. I blame USADA for it, but it's been a rough year for my picks. And I give them out, but I've said this many times on the show. I'm not putting a gun to your head. These are just bets that I personally make, and I figured I'd share with people. So stick with Sean. He knows what he's doing. I don't know if I should read this next one because might get a rise out of you. Nick asked, did Carlin enjoy Saturday night sports? And then I'm going to leave the other part blank.
Oh, shut up, little Nicky. I mean, really.
He says, with both James and Carlin being Canadian, what's the most annoying thing about Americans? Oh, man, we're going to alienate some people in this audience. What do you think, Carlin? What's something that kind of grinds your gears?
Fahrenheit. To be honest with you, I mean, like, there's still people who think, who live in Detroit, that think that, the temperature drops 50 degrees as soon as you go across the border because it goes from 75 to 20. But, Fahrenheit. Get with the metric system, guys.
I'm going to go a lack of understanding of Canada when it comes to geography, because I'm sure you get this sometimes too, where people will be like, for example, this Vancouver card. They're like, oh man, you're so lucky you're going to get to see that. And I'm like, you realize that Toronto is like a 5-hour plane ride from Vancouver. Like, I could go to Ireland in the same amount of time as it's there. Like, I feel like there's no geographic understanding of where cards are. And so people just automatically assume like, oh man, you're so lucky. And it's like, yeah, I don't live close to there. Look up Toronto on a map. Come on. It takes 2 seconds. So.
Oh, you're from Canada. You must know Bob.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Remember the, yeah. Anyways, last question from Nick. And thankfully this is the last one. He says, after answering my previous questions, how difficult is it to take me seriously? Nick, you know what? I take you as serious as I can take you. But, you know, some of these, I think I've mentioned this before. I know you're trying to go with the comedic angle on some of these questions, not doing it for me, man. Just stick to interviews. That's what I got to say. What do you think, Carlin?
I have never taken Little Nicky seriously and I refuse to start now.
All right, let's get to these Nate questions here. He says, random but curious, I wanted to get your thoughts. Ronda Rousey returns before the 4th of July weekend 2017. Yes or no, and why? I'll let you go.
I don't think Ronda Rousey's coming back, actually. I think she's enjoying being paid millions of dollars to not get kicked in the head by Holly Holm. And if she can do that, I think she's going to go the Gina Carano route and just ride off into the sunset. And I don't blame her.
I don't know. I'm still on the fence in this one, because my thing is, like, at least like with Carano, like, you know, she, you know, there were the substantial offers. I guess there's substantial offers for Rousey as well too. But my whole thing is, because Rousey competed in the Olympics, that makes me think to a certain degree there's still a bit of competitive spirit in her that would like to come back and see how this all unfolds. But knowing how she shied away from everything, I do have my concerns, and especially the comment about wanting to have Travis Brown's baby. So, I mean, there's a lot. Ew. So I'm going to say, I'll say yes. I'll say she'll come back. I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. All right, next question. He says, with Condit Maya now main eventing UFC on Fox card, who is next for Cruz? You talked about Cruz Carey, but I still think they but you still think they should go that route, or do you think they should go Dillashaw or fresh blood in Lineker? Well, let me just clarify something. I thought they would go with Carey because of the fact that Carey's from Washington State. I didn't necessarily feel like Carey deserved a title shot at this point. I still think, I mean, you know, you could go Lineker, you could go Dillashaw. I wouldn't mind seeing Lineker get the shot, to be honest, because it is something new. And Dillashaw certainly deserved a title shot as well, just the performance he put on against the Sun Tsao. But, I mean, we're seeing a lot of rematches. I know their first fight was close. It's tough, man. I'll go Lineker. What about you?
I got to go Dillashaw. Dillashaw has earned it. A Dillashaw-Cruz rematch is money in the bank as far as box office goes. I'm really hard-pressed to see an argument against the former champion TJ Dillashaw.
Interesting. Dillashaw would be, you know, also a good choice as well, but Lineker would be my first pick. Third and final question. He says, thoughts on Bellator's welterweight division. I hear they're rematching Koreshkov and Douglas Lima. When will they ever give MVP a shot? Not doing him any favors with cans anymore. I agree. I'm waiting for them to just give Paige the title shot and at the very least see where he belongs. I mean, I get the idea of building up a fighter and getting him highlight reel wins, but this has been a buildup since 2013, Carlin. I mean, this is, how much more does this guy have to do to just get a legit opponent? I don't want to see the Koreshkov rematch because I think Koreshkov probably beats Lima again. Healthy or not, I think Koreshkov's, one of the top welterweights in the world right now. I really do feel confident in saying that. I would rather see Koreshkov fight a Paige, and then we can figure out where Paige fits in the division at this point. What about you? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, they've run into some trouble with Michael Page, just that, you know, getting a name opponent for him that can stay healthy. I think they'll probably give him one more, you know, quote unquote tune up over a recognizable name before they throw him into that deep water with Koreshkov and your Limas and what have you. Maybe we do MVP and Paul Daly. I mean, that's a recipe for surefire violence right there. I agree with you on Koreshkov that I think he defeats Lima again, but you know, Bellator, the welterweight division is a pretty fluid thing right now, but I think that we get Paige one more fight before we see him anywhere near the title picture.
Who would you give him at this point? I'm just curious.
Why not Semtex?
Yeah, I think that's the fight. And, you know, it's got the UK on UK violence thing. I like that fight. And, you know, Daly just lost, but he's still a draw. I would, you know, take advantage of that. He's never going to fight Koscheck, so let's do that fight right now. I completely agree.
Hey, I want to call somebody out real quick.
This guy was a douchebag.
You don't ever give me a face shake. I'm through. They put somebody else up and give me an interview.
Yeah, shut up. Sit down. Shut up.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
I tell Jose, he better be prepared to die because I will be prepared to kill.
Here is James and Carlin's Parting Shot.
My parting shot this week is something positive, Carlin. I'm really excited to see the UFC signing some new blood from north of the border up here in Canada. It's great. Of course, earlier this week it was announced Ryan James, Battlefield fighter, middleweight division. He's been signed. He's going to be fighting Adam Hunter, not to be confused with Adam Hunter, the comedian, but Adam Hunter, the fighter. They're both going to be making their debut against each other. And of course, the other news this week is that Jeremy Kennedy has been signed, 23-year-old 8-0 prospect, a guy that, has been talked about for a couple of years now. I'm glad to see the UFC not only just signing Canadian fighters, but also going local. James is from Victoria, and Jeremy Kennedy is actually from Vancouver. So just good on the UFC for doing this. It's been far too long. I mean, the last Canadian they had signed before this was, I believe, Misha Cirkunov. We haven't seen any new blood come in. So, Canada, I feel like, has treated the UFC very well as far as, attendance and promotion and everything else. It's nice to see them return the favor and do that. And one more thing I just want to talk about here quickly, and I'm not going to mention the fighter's name, but there was a fighter who got signed to the UFC that actually had his contract rescinded. And what I heard was that, from a couple different sources, was that this fighter either agreed to this fight and then went back on it, or just fully refused the opponent and his contract was rescinded. So, interesting turn of events. I feel bad for that fighter because it sounds like he'll probably never fight in the UFC again. But nevertheless, it's good to see them signing three fighters here for this upcoming UFC on Fox 21 card in Vancouver in August. So, Carlin, what are your thoughts on the recent signings and what's your parting shot this week?
Always great to see more Maple Leaf content in the UFC. The UFC usually does a good job of kind of padding out the undercard with local talent, so it's good to see some BC boys get their shot that way. Now, if we can just get some more cards north of the border, we'll all be happy, right? All right, and I actually have a little bit of a positive parting shot as well. We must be in a good mood this week, but there was some good news to come out of the MVP Cyborg Santos fight. I know we were all very concerned for Cyborg after he had that fractured skull. The MVP's knee went a few inches deep into Cyborg's head. But they actually started a GoFundMe campaign for Cyborg Santos. His ex-wife, Chris Justino, was behind that. And, Cyborg, to his credit, said, you know what? I don't need the money, even though it's $25,000 US. That's, not a bad day at the office. Bellator is paying for his medical bills. Bellator is actually giving him his win bonus for being a trooper about this whole thing. But Cyborg Santos, to his credit, he's taking the money and he's going to do something with underprivileged kids in Brazil with it. The rumor is he's going to start a community center or just find a way to give back to the community. And I love this story. We talk about a lot of the negative stuff on this show, James, what's wrong with the sport? How can we make it better? This is a guy that's making his community better, and I got to take my hat off to him.
Yeah, and you know what? Again, and I interview a lot of fighters, Carlin. I mean, these athletes, I'd say the majority are great human beings, and this is just another example of this. And I wish more stuff like this got reported in the news instead of guys getting arrested and things like that, where, they're trying to paint the sport in a bad light. We got guys who, are really going to step up to the plate and really help out their fellow fellow human beings. So good on Cyborg Santos, and I just became an even bigger fan of the guy when I heard this news tonight, which you kind of just told me on the show. All right, let's thank our guests here. Great show. Really, really happy with this one. Jeremy Klump, you can follow him on Twitter at Jeremy Klump. Chris Camozzi, you can follow Chris Camozzi on Twitter at Chris Camozzi. You can follow Bristol Marunde, surprisingly, not surprisingly, at Bristol Marunde. And of course, Bill Mahood, you can follow him again, not too hard, at Bill Mahood. Really appreciate these guys coming on the show and giving us some great content. As always, you can follow this podcast on Twitter at Parting Shot MMA. On there, you can find links to our iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and also on Podbean as well too. Carlin, where can people get a hold of you on social media, and what do you got coming up this week?
Earlier this week, actually, you and I were both on Lopez Radio. Yeah, did a great show there. And after you checked out, myself and Jesse Schechner and Lopez got into it about American politics and Batman versus Superman, among other things. So definitely check that out on LopezRadio.com. And you can find me on the Twitter at Carlin Barzu. We can talk about face punching, beer, the reformed, resurgent, Guns N' Roses, Asian women, Bill Murray movies, Canadian politics. And that's about it, because I don't know a whole hell of a lot about anything else.
Awesome. And you guys can follow me on Twitter at LynchOnSports. Check out my work on sportsnet.ca. Got some stuff. Got actually lots of interview content coming out this week for MMA Oddsbreaker. We got the RFA card coming up on Friday. Got a bunch of guys from that. Also got some UFC interviews as well, too. So check that stuff out. And check out my work on Flow Combat. Finally got my first interview out. Carlin interviewed Kirk Huff, a fighter who was in the main event of Shamrock FC. But I just did a bunch of interviews today for Valor Fights. Of course, we're going to be doing a lot of regional stuff. So be on the lookout for that. The interview style is a little bit different, so you guys will appreciate it. It's you know, kind of switch things up a little bit. It won't be like my typical interviews you see on MMA Oddsbreaker. So check that stuff out. And thanks everyone for listening, and keep your hands up if you don't want to get knocked out.